Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Gobble gobble haters, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is Wonderful.
Thanks for listening to Wonderful. And this is a show that we use as a soapbox. We stand on it to get taller and to shout at you above the crowd, like, hey, we like spaghetti. Or like whatever it is we're talking about this week. I've never done spaghetti. That's a segment on the show.
I think that's what Evita does in that movie, Evita.
She stands on a soapbox and she goes, I'm here to talk about spaghetti.
Spaghetti.
To all of you. I've become obsessed with the mistake of words I just used of I've never done spaghetti. It makes it sound like I haven't used spaghetti as a recreational drug. Although I guess it is, right? You put it in your body and it makes you feel things. Well, I could explain why spaghetti is drugs all day if you wanted to give me the runway to do that, but it doesn't seem like you really do. So do you have any small wonders?
Well, this one's a gamble because I haven't actually tested to make sure it turned out the way I wanted it to.
Oh, boy.
But the lights on the hood for our stovetop burned out.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to take that light bulb out. I'm going to look at it and I'm going to buy some more. Because you know how like those random lights and appliances
yes.
like have the kind of bulb that like is impossible to find anywhere?
Uh-huh.
So I just thought like, I'm going to look at it. I'm going to figure it out. And I bought them and they're waiting downstairs and I'm really excited about testing.
Should
whether...
we pause right now and go run down and check this out? Because now I'm going to be on tenterhooks. This whole show.
Well, we can't go downstairs because our little son is there.
That's
and
right.
And we'll be trapped for the rest of the day.
If he sees you, he will climb on you. He will stay on you and he will not ever let go.
Yeah.
We love that at certain parts of the day, but not when mommy and daddy have to make the content.
Yeah.
For the people.
Anyway, I'm optimistic that I did a good thing and that these little tiny light bulbs will fill. And that will change your life.
The number of times that a light bulb has burnt out on some sort of specialty appliance, and I've just looked at it and been like, well, that just doesn't have lights anymore.
I know.
That object will no longer be illuminated in the traditional way.
Yeah.
But we live here now, and we are going to live here for a long time, I hope. And so I applaud your initiative.
Thank you.
I'm going to say I've been watching this show called Scavenger's Reign on Max. Formerly HBO Max, is an animated adult animated sci-fi show, and I am obsessed with it and can't stop thinking about it. Almost finished with it, and I started watching it like 2.5 days ago or so. It's real, real good. It's I've been describing it to people like if Studio Ghibli made Annihilation. It's just about people who are marooned on this extremely alien world with this like really intricate alien ecology that they have to kind of like maneuver around. It is like beautifully animated and wonderfully written, and it is just so good. So good. I do not think you would like it, even
I know you said that immediately, which I mean, describing it does sound very good. It is not among my first choices, though. I would say
no. It's very I would say gory at times and troubling, hence the adult animation, but it is man, it kicks so much ass, and I'm telling everybody that I can about it. And this is a show where I can do just that. Do you want to go first? You have to.
I was gonna say, that's not the way we do it.
No. But I thought would you like to?
I mean, to keep up with protocol, yes.
Okay, cool.
You know what a rule follower
I
am.
The boss is really cracking down on us about protocol these days.
Okay, so my thing, this may not be familiar to you. I'm hopeful that I can describe it in a way that it will become familiar. And it is the going out top.
The going out top.
Yes.
Like when you do good at a sport and then you quit the sport and say like, I'm going out top. I'm going out top. I just got a grand slam to win the World Series. I quit.
Some going people out would top. Say on the top, but...
Not
but,
me.
No.
I'm so busy playing sports that
sometimes
I will just cut words out sentences just to save time for sports.
I am talking about a phenomenon that was popular when we were younger that has now returned. And it is when you wear just a regular pair of pants, maybe a pair of jeans, as was popular when this was big in the early 2000s. And then kind of like a fancy shiny or like a different kind of top.
That's interesting. I never think about the bottom half of my body when I go out somewhere, really ever, unless it's church and then it's khakis. And if it's not church, then it's usually just jeans or whatever pants I was wearing at the time when I started getting dressed.
I wanted to show you some examples just so you would know. I found a great picture of the cast of the OC.
Oh my God. It's, yeah.
And they're all wearing going out tops.
Jesus, those are the smallest pictures I've ever seen.
I don't
seen
know how to up. Make them bigger.
Can you zoom it? Can you put your fingers on the touchpad and sort of separate them?
Oh, there we go.
I need to see these gorgeous tops. Yeah, I mean, those are out of sight.
They're all wearing denim on bottom.
Denim
and
on bottom.
Like a frilly party looking shirt on top.
Number the navels. I cannot. I could not hope to number the navels.
This was a thing that really came in handy in like high school and college where you didn't have a lot of extra income and you were going to a place that, you know, you couldn't wear your normal clothes, but you couldn't wear a formal outfit either. And it was just like, I'm going to spend $12 on a shirt.
Yeah.
And then I'm set for the night.
Yeah.
And this, I never really thought of it with a name, you know, like when we were, when I was in college, we would go out and do this and I don't think we had a name for it. But then I heard about this going out top phenomenon and how it's coming back. And I was like, oh, that was the thing. We didn't think about it that way, but that was the thing that we did.
What I like about this, there's a lot I like about this, but what I really like about it is that it is the omission of concern for the pants that defines this thing. So it's not so much the going out top, it is the all the time bottom. Like the off-court buddies of the waist down.
Yeah, you know, you can't really have a going out top without a regular bottom.
That's right, or else you're just dressing. Now it's just clothes.
Yeah, you're just dressing up.
Yeah.
Part of it, too, was in the early 2000s, like, designer jeans started to be really popular.
Yes.
I mean, I guess they really started to be popular in the 80s, but, like, this idea that you would spend, like, $300 on jeans and, like, $17 on a shirt.
I love that.
Not anything I ever did, but I did. So my going out top, and I don't know that I ever actually wore it because I was too much of a coward, but I had this, like, black velour spaghetti strap top that just tied in the back.
Oh my goodness, babe.
And I could never bring myself to, I don't think I ever actually wore it. I think it sat in my closet forever.
Do you still have it?
No, honey, I'm sorry.
That'd be a weird vibe, I feel like.
People talk about like, oh yeah, I still have, but that was like 20 years ago.
I don't have any, that would be so wild.
I don't think I
have
any clothes from 20 years ago.
I think the half-life of the shirts I would buy
would
have reduced them to their base particulate components, I feel like, at this point.
So when you research the history of the going out top,
Is it all just screenshots of the OC?
It largely like Paris Hilton, Lindsay Lohan.
Yes.
I mean, it's all the favorites. I showed you a picture that was next to the OC that had Pink, Maya, Christina Aguilera, and Lil' Kim all wearing their going out tops. But apparently the origins, according to the Washington Post in 2023, they said that it dates back to the 40s and 50s when ready-to-wear separates entered the market.
Ready-to-wear separates.
Instead of being yoked to the outfit sets, you had the ability to mix and match a skirt with a more formal top.
You said this was the 1930s when this idea was?
No, 40s and 50s.
Okay.
A separate.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's just wild. The idea of just going to a store and buying, well, hold on, because I like that, actually. I'm saying this, but I would love it if I could just go to a store and it would be like shopping for a Halloween costume where they would just be like, here's pants and socks and shoes and hat, because it's the 30s and 40s and 50s. Here's hat and pants and shirt and socks and shoes and go. That's it.
Well, and here's the thing, right? Because when you think about the idea of the going out top, if you're like, how would that even go out of fashion? But the Washington Post article said in 2010s, dresses, jumpsuits, and match sets became more standard.
Oh, interesting.
So 2010s had a return to what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Be like, this shirt goes specifically with this skirt.
Yeah. But then during COVID shutdown, we were all like itching to get back out there looking our fucking best.
Well, that is what's interesting. So like 2020s, it was more like 2017 when I started to see articles that was like, the going out top is back. And then, you know, there was, of course, COVID. And then there was a suggestion that maybe the going out top is popular because people don't want to wear uncomfortable clothes
Absolutely.
Anymore. And so they're like, want to keep their jeans on, but
I will say
dress
the,
it up.
The velour breastplate that you have described does not sound like the most comfortable sort of experience.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think I ever actually
wore
it out.
So we have no empirical evidence either supporting or to the contrary.
The other thing that, I mean, worked in my favor was there was no social media.
Yes.
I don't think I have a picture of me in any going out top now that I think about it.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, anybody that went out in the late 2000s probably had that.
Absolutely.
So part of the return, there is the suggestion that trends come back every 20 years, which, I mean, would make it about right for when I was in college.
Yeah.
But apparently, like, the what is it, the Gen Z, they're, like, super interested.
It's just Gens now. They like Gens. What they like.
And how do you know?
Friends.
Friends
with
young,
them.
Young friends.
Well, I don't know if I would call them friends. We're like Razor Scooter and my fellow Razor Scooter enthusiasts.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you have your meetups and
me and the other mall rats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, so like this whole Y2K period is apparently of great interest.
Fuck yes.
To the young people.
I'm ready. I've been ready for this my whole life.
We went to a party that was thrown that had a 2003 theme.
Yes.
And it was really eye-opening because I'd never been to a party that was themed after a particular year before.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting to go back in that time period and really re-experience a lot of this. I did not wear a going out top to that party.
No.
But there were a lot of them in attendance.
Yes. No, I mean, 2003 was a great year for media. That was a lot of fun to play with at that party. But yes, very disorienting because the last time I had been to a party like that was, I mean, not exactly 2003, maybe closer to 2009 or so, but still a harrowing sort of flashback.
Yeah. So I still kind of think this way. Like if you were telling me we were going to a bar tonight, You would say,
what?
I would.
What are you talking about?
I would say, Griffin, I don't know when the last time we went to a bar was.
Yeah.
But the second thing I would do is I would prepare an outfit, which would probably be very similar to this.
Yeah.
Like regular comfortable pants and then a shirt that suggests like, I know I'm somewhere.
Yeah.
That's the going out top.
Yeah. That's cool, babe. I love that. I love fashion.
I know.
And so do you.
Yes.
We both love it so
That's
much.
That's a big thing people say about us.
We are at the forefront of a bold new fashion movement. And I don't know what it, I don't know what it is. Because we're so at the forefront of it that like we are ahead of what it actually is.
Yeah.
Defining it.
Uh-huh.
But whatever it is going to be big and lucrative. This is the last episode of our podcast. We're getting into fashion lines now.
Yes. And the fashion will be something that you wear.
Yes.
And you will have never worn it before.
Join us next week as we discuss going out bottoms. This is where you wear the worst shirt you own.
Yeah.
But the pants. Hey, can I steal you away?
Yes.
Okay. We all got needs. And to satisfy those needs, we subscribe to different services to fulfill those needs. Some of them are pretty dang good at it, if I do say so myself. But then you put away your childish things. You say, I don't have a need for a string cheese subscription service. String
I keep receiving this huge box of string cheese every month and immediately throwing it away.
Yeah.
maybe I should not receive this huge box of string cheese every month.
But you forget, don't you? So easily.
I know.
Your many subscriptions you've scattered, like Johnny Appleseed to his apple seeds. Well, Rocket Money is here to help. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps you lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. I've used Rocket Money before, and it found, not a joke, maybe six things that I had completely forgotten about. Like, maybe about $50 a month worth of shit that I just completely did not know, nor did I interface with the things that I was subscribing to.
Yeah, it's like that. We got that one app that promised to show us hockey and then almost entirely stopped showing us hockey.
Yep. And Rocket Money was like, you're not watching the hockey anymore. The Blues lost and not in the playoffs. Anyway. Rocket Money is fantastic, and we recommend using it if you think you might have some of those phantom subs. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wonderful. That's rocketmoney.com/wonderful. One last time, rocketmoney.com/wonderful. Folks, I'm recording this ad by myself because Rachel, she did something totally wild. She hopped on her electric e-bike, and she was like, I am out of here. And then she zoomed off. She hit a ramp and flew up in the sky like an E.T. movie. And it just went so fast that I was like, dang, where'd my wife even go? And she yelled from over the horizon on a bike adventure. And so I have to celebrate that. I have to cheer for her on that. This bike that Rachel got from Electric E-Bike, it is one, very sleek and stylish. It looks fast because it is. The battery lasts forever. It shows up at your door, ships for free. It's got a quick toolless assembly, and you can even fold it up for easy travel and storage. It is the perfect time of year to have a sweet little bike for yourself to go on your own bike adventures away from your husband. Anyway, go full throttle into spring with Electric E-Bikes, the number one selling e-bikes in the nation. Get your adventure started at electricebikes.com, and please mention that Wonderful sent you in the post-checkout survey. That's electricebikes.com.
Oh, darling, why won't you accept my love?
My dear, even though you are a duke, I could never love you. You borrowed a book from me and never returned it.
Save yourself from this terrible fate by listening to Reading Glasses.
We'll help you get those borrowed books back and solve all your other reader problems.
Reading Glasses, every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
I'm Emily Heller.
And I'm Lisa Hannawalt.
And we're the hosts of Baby Geniuses.
We've been doing our podcast for over 10 years.
When we started, it was about trying to learn something new every episode.
Now it's about us trying to actively get stupider. And it's working.
Hang out with us and you'll hear us chat about
gardening,
horses,
various problems with our butts,
and all the weird stuff that makes us horny.
That's so weird, all that stuff. Baby Geniuses, a show for adult idiots.
Every other week on Maximum Fun.
Baby Geniuses, we know everything. Baby Geniuses, tell us something we don't know.
I do not know if you have much experience with the subject I'm going to discuss. I think you may. I want to talk about point-and-click adventure games.
Oh.
I know that you played a lot of like PC games with your grandma, who was an early adopter of PCs and PC gaming. I know that that was more in the sort of like Wolfenstein area, but would like a Myst or a Monkey Island or anything along those lines?
I did play a little Myst. I found it impossible.
Everyone felt that way about Myst. No one ever beat Myst.
I played some Tomb Raider.
Okay.
On the computer. Yeah, Doom, Heretic, Wolfenstein.
Yeah, those are all
Mad Dog shootings. McCree.
Mad Dog McCree, we're getting closer. That one at least has clicking in it. I am talking about a genre that, much like when I talked about sort of like character-based rhythm games, is not around so much anymore these days, or if it is, it is like in the realm of sort of indie games. But in the 80s and 90s, this was the biggest shit in the whole wide world.
Yeah. No, I remember when this idea of you being in constant movement came to video games.
Right.
And like how nauseating it was to me of just like, oh, I can't play this for very long.
Right. Point and click adventure games were not that. Point and click adventure games were largely static screens with a little guy on it that you could make walk around and solve puzzles in a very chill way. And it really wasn't until sort of computer graphics and processing became fast enough that like first person shooters and action games like Tomb Raider sort of like became what everybody wanted, that people looked at adventure games and were like, oh, that seems pretty fucking boring.
You'd like move your cursor over something to see like, is this interactive?
Yes. Yes. That is, that is a beautiful staple of this genre. I spent so much of my time playing adventure games growing up. We always had a computer from the time I was born, basically. And it was such a huge genre, because when adventure games, point and click adventure games specifically, were coming out, like computers couldn't do a lot more intense stuff than just that. Obviously, adventure games as a genre is a pretty huge umbrella, starting with text-based adventures like Zork. Zork, of course. I'm looking at you for recognition of Zork, but I
don't remember Zork. I do remember Hitchhiker's Guide.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That was text based.
That was a fucking great one.
Yeah.
You had stuff like King's Quest came out, which sort of added visual stuff to it. That was made by a company called Sierra Online, which was one of the two big sort of creators of adventure games in the 80s. In 1985, a company called ICOM Simulations released a game for the Macintosh computer called Deja Vu, which was the first in a series of MacVenture games. And the Macintosh computer was a sort of like pioneer in making it so that everybody used a mouse in addition to a keyboard. So these games were just static screens that you would sort of, like you said, just sort of move a cursor around.
Can't
on
you,
and
like,
try to add...
still hear the sound of a mouse in your head, like when you'd like move it real fast on the desktop, like hear
the
that when
shkonk,
I
shkonk, shkonk. Yeah, when there was no way to adjust sort of like sensitivity, and so like in order to go coast to coast on your small computer screen, it would involve several lifts and drops of a 2.5 pound piece of computer hardware. Yes. A lot of that happened playing these sort of MacVenture games. The biggest name in the game was actually LucasArts, which was originally Lucasfilm Games, which joined the scene in 1986. They made an adventure game adaptation of Labyrinth, which I didn't know.
Whoa,
I never knew that there was an adaptation of Labyrinth, but it was this studio's sort of first foray. It didn't exactly set the world on fire, which may be why I hadn't heard of it, but their second game, LucasArts' second game, was helmed by a programmer named Ron Gilbert, who would go on to sort of become one of the godfathers of this whole genre, and that game was called Maniac Mansion. Maniac Mansion whips ass. It is like a pastiche of like B-movie tropes and like campy horror stuff. You explored, you could control three teens, and you would explore this big, just scary house filled with mad scientists and monsters and
Scooby-Doo.
Sort of Scooby-Doo, like, mm-hmm. Yeah, except with death in it. You could die in this game.
Okay.
There were very high stakes, and it was kind of scary because you would just be, like, walking around doing the adventure game thing of, like, I'm going to click on this, see if this will pick up. But then sometimes, like, a mad scientist would chase you around with a knife or something.
Yeah.
Super scary. This game sort of changed also the way that people would interact with adventure games. Ron Gilbert created this system called the Script Creation Utility for Maniac Mansion, which would be acronymized into SCUM.
Okay.
And SCUM would become the engine for pretty much every adventure game that LucasArts would go on to make, and they made a fucking lot of them, and most of them are club bangers. Sam & Max was a big series.
I played
for them.
That one.
Sam & Max is a classic. All the Monkey Island games. Loom, which was this weird sort of like musical, magical fantasy game. The Dig, Day of the Tentacle, which was sort of a spiritual successor to Maniac Mansion. Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis. I think they also made a Last Crusade game also. They were also adapting Lucas franchises as well. They are all so good and so incredible. And they all use this system, SCUM, which basically, you know, you can move around and you click on things to interact with them. But then at the bottom of the screen, you have like 16 verbs. And that's how you know like what you can do. So it'll be like turn on, turn off, pick up, push, kick, open.
Yeah.
And so using those, like it created a way of sort of parsing what you are seeing in these games. And it made them very enjoyable to play and fun to kind of like experiment with. Those games all also had a humorous streak a mile wide. They are sort of irreverent and weird. A lot of the humor is, you know, not the funniest stuff I've ever seen, but it was so charming, especially the Monkey Island games are so weird. It's just like a full send-up of all pirate canon. Instead of sword fights, you have insult fights, and you have to like learn that mini game in order to like finish the entire game. Sierra, who made King's Quest, which is a sort of more traditional like fantasy adventure game series that they made like a million of, they would go on to keep making quest games. Basically, they made Space Quest, like five of those, Police Quest. They would eventually go on to make an RPG adventure game series called Quest for Glory, which is probably my favorite adventure series ever. What was neat about those games is they were just like other point-and-click adventure games, except you picked a class at the beginning, and you had stats sort of like in D&D or whatever. And the solutions to the puzzles would change depending on what class you were playing. So if you were playing the game as a thief, you would do completely different stuff to solve the puzzles. So it wasn't like Monkey Island where it was like, pick up the rubber chicken and use it on this. It would be like, oh, I'm going to use sneaking here to like go in here, or I'll fight with my fighter, or magic as a magic user. What was also really cool about those games is that you could save your character after you finished one game and import them into the next one. So you could have the same character throughout all five of the Quest for Glory games, which was so incredibly cool. I started playing these games probably when I was like 7 years old or so, and then I was able to sort of like keep my same character going throughout the whole run.
How would that work?
Floppy disk. You would save it to a floppy disk, and so whenever you loaded up a game, you could import right off the floppy disk.
Okay, I was going to say, like, that sounds like a web-based thing, but I know that's couldn't have been true.
Yeah, no, that's way ahead of their time.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that they were called Sierra Online was the name of the... I don't know. They didn't have internet in these things. So Sierra and LucasArts were sort of the two big players in the space. But other games came along and sort of broke the mold, like Myst. There were also a lot of Myst games. Riven was a very good one that was also kind of creepy. It was like Myst, except sometimes you'd be walking around and then you'd turn a corner and there'd just be a little ghost boy there. Ooh, spooky stuff. And then, of course, there were like full motion video adventure games, which were all pretty universally terrible. Don't tell Justin I said that. I have so much fondness for these games, partially because of like, you know, they really were the only sorts of games that were coming out on the PC for a long time, and they were the only types of games that we had. And so I have a lot of nostalgia for them for that reason.
I just remembered one.
What?
The Seventh Guest.
The Seventh Guest, absolutely. Yeah. The Seventh Guest. Yeah, Seventh Guest fucking rules.
When you said Little Ghost Boy, like...
I think they're remaking Seventh Guest. Or maybe it just came out. Yeah, I think so. These games, like, they weren't just, like, the only games coming out. They were also, like... vast in comparison to like other games like a Wolfenstein, right? Like Wolfenstein, not much for story or really any writing or any character development or anything along those lines. You could get that with adventure games, and so that was just eye-opening for me, somebody who, you know, had been playing video games my whole life as a child. Getting to play a game and being like, whoa, actually, this story I'm like vibing with, or this joke in Day of the Tentacle, like actually made me laugh really loud. And I didn't know video games could do that.
Yeah.
But like I said, graphics got better, processing became, stronger.
Yeah.
First person shooters became every game and other sort of action games. And so, pretty much around the turn of the century, adventure games just sort of died off completely. In 2004, there was a company called Telltale Games, which tried to revive Sam & Max and some of those old series. Then they started to do adventure game adaptations of sort of niche franchises.
They did The Walking Dead game, didn't they?
So yeah, in 2012, they had this huge smash hit with The Walking Dead, which they made, I think, a few seasons of. Telltale was unique in that they would make adventure game seasons, so you would play like a 2 or 3 hour long chunk that would be like episode one of like a 5-part season. And we adored those games.
Yeah.
We played the hell out of those. Looking back on sort of the Walking Dead media property as a whole, I think I like those better than the TV or comic or anything else that really came out of those. Because they were gritty as hell and fascinating and presented sort of moral dilemmas that were very thoughtful and unique and really like great for same screen sort of like multiplayer, like you're watching an interactive movie, which is kind of like the height of what this genre could do. Unfortunately, Telltale had a huge success with Walking Dead. They did a bunch of other like really great adventure game adaptations, but unfortunately they like expanded way too far, way too fast. They overstaffed like a ridiculous degree and took on all of these different like licensing deals to like make a Game of Thrones one and make a X, Y, or Z one. And they shut down in like 2018 because they just sort of they bloated a little too fast. So now point and click adventure games are, like I said, sort of the indie game territory. And they're doing like incredibly interesting stuff with them. There's stuff like There Is No Game, which we actually watched a video, I believe, of Lankybox playing with Henry.
Yeah.
Which is very, very good. Or Curse of the Golden Idol is one that came out last year that I really liked. They're keeping the spirit alive of adventure games and sort of innovating them in cool new ways. But like I talked about in sort of the character-based rhythm game segment I did a few weeks ago, like there will never be another time like the 80s and 90s for adventure games or for any genre of game ever again, because, you know, I have Steam open on my computer. I could click on three buttons and play any of like 50,000 games or something like that. Yeah. So I have, like I said, a lot of nostalgia for point and click adventure games, and I will still go back and replay, you know, Quest for Glory or some of those old ones. Because once you know like what to use the rubber chicken on, you can pretty much burn through those games in like 30 minutes or so. Can I tell you what our friends at home are talking about?
Yes.
Hemlock says, my small wonder is farmers market vendors recognizing me. I go to my town farmers market every week, and the vendor who sells cheese recognizes me now. It makes me feel so cool and like I'm in a little video game, and our friendship level has increased.
Did that ever happen to us?
Yes. At the Austin farmers market, we used to get ginger beer from the same vendor, and there was a woman there who, because the ginger beer vendor, you could bring your old bottle of ginger beer back. She would be like, more of the same, Mr. McElroy. She didn't know me. But there was a flash of recognition in her face whenever she saw us.
Yeah, we used to go almost every weekend and we would get like the same five things.
Yeah.
And I don't remember there anyone ever being like, the usual?
There was like a Thai meal kit place too.
And did they remember us?
I remember one time I walked up and they're like, what did you think of that, you know, Tom Kha soup? And I'd, you know, say, like,
that's nice.
It was very, very good. Chris says, my small wonder is shirts without physical tags. They don't irritate your skin, and you don't have to try to cut them, only to have them sharp and itchy or end up cutting the shirt. Bonus points if they have a printed graphic on the inside of the shirt, all the useful material and washing information with none of the irritation.
Yes. This is, like, almost the only kind of shirt I will buy for our children.
Yeah.
Just because I remember that sensation as a kid
the
of,
worst.
Like, the for whatever reason, in children's clothes, the tags were always, like, they would jut straight out.
And there would be, like, six of them.
Yeah.
It was like a mattress situation inside of there. Thank you to Bowen and Augustus for the use of our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. Thank you to Maximum Fun for having us on the network. Go to MaximumFun.org. Check out all the great shows that they have there and download them all. Download every episode 10 times. And, oh, Candlelights is coming up.
Yeah, but before that, Till Death Do Us Part.
Oh, shit. That's right. I don't know why I'm saying no shit. I already had to watch the movie.
This is going
to
come out the day before. For those
of
you that don't know, every American Thanksgiving, they release this podcast. And it is a delight.
Yes, this is our ninth year of watching Paul Blart Mall Cop 2 with our friends Tim and Guy from The Worst Idea of All Time. Well, the ninth viewing of Paul Blart Mall Cop 2 is when you really start to unlock a lot of stuff.
And then Candle Nights, of course.
And then Candle Nights is coming in December. You can find a link to tickets for that at McElroy.family. As always, proceeds for that show. It's a virtual live holiday spectacular. Not live. A virtual holiday spectacular. We'll go to benefit Harmony House in Huntington, an organization we adore. And we have other merch and stuff over at macroymerch.com. So why don't you go check that out, too? There's some great Blart merch, actually, on there.
I saw that.
That's it. I have to go right now because I have an appointment to get to. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us.
Namaste.
Namaste. As always, like we say at the end of every show, namaste.
Namaste.
And also with you.
Exactly.
Sort of mixing my... spiritual.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported
directly
by you.